What is up, all of my beautiful freaking people? Welcome back to another episode of FML Talk. Today, we are bringing another man on into the lion's den. And it's an interview that I'm really excited for you guys to hear. So sit back, grab a drink, and welcome to FML Talk.
Oh my God. Wait, how old was the other girl?
19. Can you believe that shit?
Hey, this is Gabrielle Stone.
Good book.
He did what?
48 hours?
What a dick.
Yeah, but have you seen all the photos on our Instagram?
And this is FML Talk.
Oh, no, she didn't.
Oh, my goodness. Let's get some male energy on this show. I'm ready for it. You probably recognize Josh Wingate from movies like Priest and Insidious, or TV shows like Code Black, Lethal Weapon, The Rookie, CSI, Sons of Anarchy, Teen Wolf. I mean, the list goes fucking on. But I know him as a good longtime friend. And I had been getting messages from people saying that they wanted to hear a male's perspective of being cheated on. And so I reached out to Josh, seeing if he would be open to telling his story, which is rather unique, his journey that he's had. And he agreed to come on. He was very nervous when he showed up. He looked at me and he's like, Gabrielle, I almost didn't come. It was a lot of fear for him to walk through to speak about his story and his journey publicly. And I'm so glad that he was able to push through that fear, because it ended up being a really beautiful episode and I can't wait for you guys to hear it. One of the things that we talk a lot about in this episode is toxic masculinity, which examples of that could be growing up hearing men don't cry, you know, be a man, don't show your feelings. Men are supposed to do things in a certain way. Really toxic traits that get instilled in young men more often than not, unfortunately, especially men that grew up 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago. Now, in today's world, we're thankfully starting to steer away from that in a lot of households. And I personally know a lot of women that are raising some really incredible boys and teaching them to be emotional and be in touch with their emotions and be compassionate. But not everyone was lucky enough to grow up in a household like that. So when we talk about toxic masculinity, it really refers to the notion that some people's ideas of manliness that they teach perpetuates things like domination, homophobia, aggression, and really negative qualities and traits that are instilled with men from a very, very young age. And this idea that men need to act tough and avoid showing emotions, it can be really harmful to their mental health and can have really serious consequences for people that enter their lives and society as a whole, which is how it really became known as toxic masculinity. And unfortunately, there are a lot of boys that grew up in households that taught that. Josh was one of those people. So it's really interesting to hear the story and background of his upbringing that then kind of set him on this trajectory to how his adult life played out as far as relationships and what he's learned from all of that and how he has broken through some of that. So I'm very excited to dive into this episode today, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Without further ado, Mr. Josh Wingate. Josh Wingate.
My face hurts.
I know you're a little nervous. Don't be nervous. You're just walking into the lion's den.
Don't think of a white horse.
Right, right. No, I'm so happy that you're here, because I know a little bit about your story that we're going to be talking about today. And I think it's really important that we get a male's perspective of what it has been like to get cheated on in a relationship, because we've talked a lot about what it's been like for me as a female, what other people have dealt with. We've gotten a perspective of a male that has done the cheating, but we've never talked to someone who has gone through kind of all aspects of it. So I'm excited to dive into that with you.
Yeah, let's just dive in.
Let's just go head first, rip the bandaid.
Yes. Well, yeah, because I guess I'm kind of both, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So why don't you give everybody a little backstory, kind of explanation of who you are first before we go into the relationship stuff?
Okay. Well, my name is Josh Wingate, as you said, and grew up in Massachusetts, single mom, and how far back do you want me to go?
Well, I mean, I kind of like the staples of what shaped, you know, some of the things we're going to be talking about in your relationship. So yeah, the single mom.
Okay. Yeah. Single mom. My parents split probably, from what I remember, around like 3-4 years old. Yeah. Earliest memory. I've done a lot of work on this one. I used to not even be able to talk about it. But earliest memory is I'm in the back of a car. And I think it was my father's car at night. And then I think I was supposed to be going to stay with him. But apparently, and this is kind of cloudy, but like super dark memory. And I just didn't know where I belonged. Things are going back. I think I went back and forth between his house and her place 3 or 4 times that night. And then I woke up the next morning under the bed at his place.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And just really like,
don't know really how to stand my ground and like where I belong.
Yeah. And that where, and I think that theme is, has been super prevalent in, I would say 90% of my life, than not knowing where I belong. So it's no surprise I'm an actor. Right. So but really, yeah, not knowing where I belong, not knowing where I fit in. And that carried over into other aspects of childhood. Having the single mom, all my cousins who I'm really close with are all nuclear families, and mom, dad, brothers, sisters. So I'm only child, no brothers, sisters, no other, just one parent. Mm-hmm. So even in the family dynamic, I could see that there was something wrong. Like, and there was like, I was different.
Right.
Even in, you know, adolescent years, I think my first like French kiss, or we called it scooping where I grew up, which is really
random. That's such an ugly word for it. Why would you ever call that?
I didn't invent it, but if you like scooped on someone.
Oh my God. Boston, get it together. Okay.
But I think it was very specific to Quincy, Massachusetts.
Okay, got it, got it.
Quincy is just its own little microcosm of awesomeness and strangeness as well. But yeah, so first kiss was, I was 11. Uh-huh. So I was pretty young and with an older girl. And I just remember feeling like so, I don't know, it was like a high almost. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, whoa. And I was, it was something that I had that was special. And so I think I started developing that at that age, being different was also good. Mm-hmm. But I also was bullied, and I was also very much a mama's boy. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, my mom always taught me, always walk away, always walk away. But she's super combative as well. Like, I learned how, and this is very relevant, I think, for where we're going to get to in my ex-marriage, is learning how to fight was not healthy. Mm. Like, it was very verbal, very, you know, cut right to it, especially in my adolescent years. As I got older, just and any name you name it, every name in the book, you know, no holds bar, just and that was how it was, you know.
So like a toxic way of communicating. Yeah. When it came to altercations and fighting.
Yeah And then it became like, that's just how I learned how to argue and learn how to fight. And it became a defense mechanism.
Sure.
Because I was being, it was coming at me, and so it became a defense mechanism, and definitely carried over through most of my relationships. Mm. And I'm not saying I didn't know any better, but I didn't know any better.
Right, right.
Until I decided like, oh, wait, this is a pattern in my life that is not good. But, you know, you can tell yourself that, and then it's, you can logically be like, oh, that's not good, let me not do that. And
right.
Then you get triggered, and then it's like,
happens all over again.
I was in a toxic relationship, believe it or not, in Massachusetts with a, you know, someone that was just kind of fit the bill, that I tend to have gotten in relationships with when I was younger is someone who is an outlier themselves, and then but not necessarily an outlier and like doing great things, an outlier that probably not very mentally healthy. And my arrogant young self thought I would be able to help and save, but really I needed the help,
right.
The help and saving. But so anyways, I found out like she had like made out with some guy one night, and I was working 7 days a week in bars and restaurants. I'm like drinking every single night, just part of the lifestyle. I found that out and I was like, what the fuck am I doing with my life? And the next morning I went and I bought a one-way ticket to Los Angeles. Because acting was a big deal.
So you come to LA. Yeah. When did you meet the woman that became your wife?
In high school.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. So we went to the same high school. She was a year older. I had done some theater with her in high school. And I had also done some theater with her in post, like some community stuff. She was in a long-term relationship with her high school sweetheart. Now they moved out here together. She was supposedly going to pursue acting, but she more is in the nonprofit sector and works in that film and just made a career in that world. Obviously, they split up, and then it was just... I had just gotten to a breakup with someone out here, and she was single, and we knew each other, and we got together, and we're like, oh, this is fun. We were just hanging out, and then we slowly started dating, and it was just a lot. The stars kind of aligned in a lot of ways. We knew each other. Like, we were hometown friends, and then fast forward several years later, we decided to get married. But before we got married, we were living together in Santa Monica. And this is one of my MOs had always been, if I felt like the relationship was going to end or if I was going to be left, I was engaged. I know I'm kind of jumping around, but I was engaged when I was pretty young. I was 22, 23. And amazing, beautiful, wild, crazy love, but just like, no way. Crazy. And she had left. She like left empty apartment type of thing. So abandonment was definitely a issue in my life with my father leaving.
Right.
Not really like with, especially in my teenage years with my mom and young adulthood with my mom. It was like, is it love? Is it not? It was kind of like a in and out. And
yeah. Abandonment and not knowing where you stand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I come to LA. I actually, the girl who I left in Massachusetts, I had a moment of weakness and said she could come. So we were in a relationship up here. I left that relationship right to another relationship. It's just kind of what I did.
Right.
And serial monogamy, but also if it got rough, I wasn't monogamous.
Got it.
You know?
Okay.
So it was just looking, I'm able to look at now and see, oh yeah, it's my way of finding a place to belong.
Right. And making sure that you were okay and not abandoned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
you were with your girlfriend at the time before you guys got married?
Okay. So we were in a relationship. We were living together.
Okay. And what happened that made you feel like you needed to run and cheat?
I kind of felt her pulling away. I was in a program that is supposed to be for good, but I met someone in that program, and just in chemistry, and I was in a program where, hey, I felt like I belonged.
Right.
So I can really see these themes so easily now.
Right. You know, hindsight.
It's like, oh, there's the dot. Just so you could, easy. You know, I'm not as complicated of a person as I thought I was.
Right.
You know,
I'm pretty,
you could easily map my life. So, yeah. So I met this person and we had a super crazy chemistry, and I did what I always did. And I started seeing her on this, you know, secretly. And yet not being living with integrity and honesty and telling my girlfriend, who would then become my wife, but she found out about it. And we were part of a yoga community too. I just laugh at myself. The shit I've done in my life. It's like, oh yes, I'm this yogi, but here I am. Here I am doing all this shit. Yeah, so I ended the other relationship, the one I was, the other girl I was seeing, and we found a couples therapy, and we went to couples therapy, and this is legit probably the first time I was in a legit therapist. I probably should have been since high school,
right.
Not younger, but back east, it's like,
yeah.
You know, I was in a part of a tragic accident in high school where a kid died in a hockey game as a result of my check. So I should have been in therapy.
Yeah.
I should have been in therapy. And we had a school therapist. And I remember one time being super vulnerable and asking her, I'm like, can I see you as my therapist? Because I connected with her. And she said she couldn't. And I was like, which she legally couldn't.
But right.
As a kid in a vulnerable place like right. that, I would abandoned.
You're like, well, I'm never fucking asking for help again.
Yeah, exactly. And plus, the family I grew up in, Irish Catholic, we don't really talk about the real problems.
Mm-hmm.
Love my family, but it's a big weakness.
Yeah.
And it's so back to where we were. So first time I go into therapy, we go find a couples therapist and went to it pretty regularly. And it became a little bit about individual therapy and then couples therapy and things we were working on. And things got better they definitely got better because decided to get married, you know?
Right. And so did she had forgiven you through the therapy that you worked in, you know, in couples therapy. Do you feel like you were really putting in the work and doing what mm-hmm. needed to be done to like rectify the wrongs and like build the relationship back up?
Yes. And yes, I looked at a lot of the reasons why I would have those behaviors, like, you know, leaving the relationship type of behaviors. And I also started developing a complex that who I was intrinsically, who I was as a person was bad.
Mm.
So I started trying to become someone that would appease her.
Got it.
And it worked for a while, mm-hmm. you know, but then of course, like the, you know, the more you do that and the more you leave yourself and who you really are behind, because, you know, it's like, oh, I have this bad thing, so it's all bad.
Right.
It's like, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater type of thing.
Yeah.
The further we went in the relationship, the further I was always just trying to be something, right? Because she came up from a nuclear family. I didn't. She knew how to be a good person, how to run a business, how to, mm-hmm. you know, this is what people do, that thing. And I could never actually meet those things because I'm Josh Wingate.
Right.
And I'm not every person. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I think we developed different communication styles. And for a while, I think we really tried. And I think it was definitely a we thing. And, you know, learned about love languages and learned about better how to communicate with one another. And yeah. And
so then you guys decided to get married.
Yes.
So everything must have been pretty good for a significant amount of time for you to want to take that step together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you ever feel like there was fully forgiveness from her part?
I don't know. So I guess that would mean no. Because I think,
but it was good enough for you to
think that
you could propose and for her to want to move forward. And
yeah. Yeah. So yes, exactly. So I would say yes. In forgiveness of that, but I think that maybe there wasn't full forgiveness and it manifested in other ways other than that. And other than that, like, you know, I didn't do the dishes on time or something like mm-hmm. that, or didn't take the trash out when it was supposed to be taken
out,
or whatever it was. It was like a multitude of things, and then I'd do it, and then it was only because I was asked to do it, and so therefore it was like never good enough. And so I think there was like almost like a
resentment.
Yeah. Yes. And I'm not taking away from the love we had, because there was a love. One of the best days of my life was my wedding day. It was mm-hmm. fucking awesome.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful. All these people here are celebrating. You know, we were super connected, and there was definitely love. There's no denying that there was love. And I think that's the hard part of the way things ended. It's so easy to forget, like, oh, wait, there's actually some beautiful stuff here and beautiful connection and love and learning.
So where did it take a turn after you guys got married?
You know, the honeymoon phase was awesome after, you know, we were married, you know, super connected and physical, sexually, like, beautiful. And then it just kind of fizzled fast. Mm-hmm. And I think pretty early on in our relationship, it just kind of like went back similarly to that phase we were in where I was going to leave the relationship.
Where you felt her pulling away.
Yeah, pulling right. away. And, you know, I wanted kids, so I was brought that up a lot. And there was always something that else that had to be done. And kids, and we're getting old. We're not getting any younger. And I think it was on our second anniversary. We're up in northern Maine where her family has a place. And you know, it was so clear that she was so far away. Like, cruel in so many ways. Like, kind of pulled away and like a despise for me in many ways. So, but I was, you know, once I decided to get married, I was in
the relationship. And, when that was happening, were you sitting in the relationship going, what the fuck am I doing wrong? Because I remember in my marriage, you know, the sick period that the affair was going on, and it could have been going on longer than that, but like I know for a fact that it was 6 months at minimum, that I was sitting there going to therapy, doing all the work, really showing up, and nothing was being reciprocated and nothing was ever enough. And I was like, what the fuck am, like, what's wrong? And it makes you like second guess everything inside of yourself, because you're like, if I'm showing up and I'm doing all this work and it's still not enough for this person, like, what's wrong with me? Like, it's gotta be me. And it really fucks with your psyche in the sense of like, you really, like, your confidence is just shot.
I'm yesing and nodding on all of the above. 100%. And I had decided, which I discovered in therapy, I decided at one point, probably when I was like between the ages of 3 to 6 years old, that when I became a husband, I was going to, that's it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be a father. That's it. Like, this is it. So that is almost a negative reason to stay in a relationship and being a part of the relationship be good. But it's like a core belief that we did, that we establish in our life and we accept in our life, but we don't necessarily know we did it.
Right.
But I knew I had that value. Like,
well, and it was reinstilled in you when you watched and experienced your parents break up and go back and forth. So you were like, I'm not fucking going to repeat that. So I'm sure it was even more pressure on that sense.
And nor would I want to do that to a child or to somebody else type of thing. So, So, I mean, you know, during that period when I felt that way, I came back home shortly after, and she was staying back east. She had family up there. She would spend more time back there, and she could work remotely. And, you know, I could just, something had happened where she was like out and she was drinking, and she was just, again, being like really kind of off-putting and curt and cold. And I was like, you know, watching her find my iPhone, and she was like not going where she said she was going.
Oh, fuck.
And I was kind of like that. And then I kept talking to her. She was just, and she got really upset with me. And I think she ended up going back to her mother's but I just had this feeling. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I think she was back home again. That feeling was still, and I found on one of her devices, you know, a chat. And so she'd been in a, whether it had gotten physical or not yet, she was in a
emotional
relationship outside the marriage for a while, like within like a year, or maybe definitely within the first 2 years of the marriage.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So for a long period of time as well.
It felt, you know, whether it was a long period of time or not, it was definitely months.
Yeah.
You know, it was definitely months. And, you know, she had even shot a music video with this guy. So, you know, and it was clear that there was interest. You know, so then I confronted her about the conversation, and of course it was deny, and then eventually she admitted to it.
Admitted to having an emotional relationship with him, or admitted?
And physical.
Both.
Yeah. Talk about cognitive dissonance. Just like, I literally felt like the world just out from underneath my feet.
Yeah.
Just.
Well, it's an interesting situation because you guys had gotten together and you had stepped out on the relationship, and then you had both chosen to go to therapy, do the work, and, you know, forgive and work through it, and made the decision to take a more serious step and get engaged and take vows and be married. And then just for her to turn around and do the same thing. It's yeah. really like, why bother getting married in the first place?
You know, and I mean, listen, she can't be. Yes. Yes, I get it. But, you know, she can't be to blame for everything. Like, we're in a relationship, and I definitely, like I said, when I get triggered, or I've done so much work on myself, because, and a great reason because of this relationship and this marriage. But, you know, I get angry, I get upset, or I get threatened. It's like the words come out, and it's like verbally abusive, verbally assaulting. And, you know, it came back. Trust me, it was both ways. And she definitely knew exactly what button to go after.
Right.
And, like, it was a jugular. It's like, I'm going to go right for the jugular. So it wasn't, you know, and so I can imagine not feeling safe in a relationship like that with someone who would, you know, oh yeah, we love each other and balls, but then, hey, next minute it's like, fuck you, you're a bitch.
Right.
You know, I can see clearly, like, you know, oh yeah, that's not a safe environment.
Right.
So I understand.
It's toxic.
Yeah, it's toxic. Definitely toxic. And
who was the person that she was stepping out on the marriage with?
Someone,
because it wasn't someone just random, right?
No, it was a guy from same high school we went to. He was older than her, and so I think when I was a freshman, I think he was a senior.
But like, you knew him?
Yeah, I knew. Yeah, yeah.
And that he must knew have, who I was. And that must have dug a little deeper. I mean,
yeah, of course,
can
because
imagine.
You know, you have a knowing. I think maybe, yeah, there's an, you know who I am.
Yeah,
and
you know that we're married.
Yeah. You know, so yeah, I confronted him. You know, I got his phone number and I called him and had some choice words. And, you know,
what did he have to say?
Well, your relationship was basically ending anyway. So that was his belief.
Right.
I was like,
well, that's because what she made him believe.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I understand that. And, yeah. And then, of course, he's denying. And I'm like, she's sitting right here. She just told me.
Right.
So now you're lying to me.
Oof.
And I'm like, yeah. It's really good that he was in Massachusetts and that was
incredible. Right, right. It's really good I couldn't drive to his house to confront him.
No, it's extremely good. And I, you know.
Okay, so after this, what did you guys just decide to get a divorce, or was there a let's work through it?
No, it was a same therapist, same therapy thing. Mm-hmm. And it started off very much on the scale of, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, da da da. And then it grew pretty freaking quick. It went from why it was my fault for everything.
Mm.
And
was why it was your fault the initial cheating that happened? Or was it, you know, the way that the relationship was and the, all of the above?
All of the above, probably. All right. Of the above, yeah. And then I got an ultimatum from her to see my own therapist, find my own therapy. Not even fine. She gave me a card of somebody that she was seeing a therapist at this office. And mm-hmm. She gave me a card. And basically, was like, you have to go to therapy or else.
Right.
So I was like, okay, I'll try it. And the great irony is that I'm my first session in there. It's a young woman. So it's kind of weird for me being like at least almost 40, no, probably like late 30, 38 at mm-hmm. that time, across from a young 20-something therapist, and just like, blah, blah, blah. And I was saying, you know, well, she wants this, she wants me to do that, she wants this, she wants that. And the therapist said, well, what do you want?
Mm.
And it legit felt like I was driving a big, huge Mack truck at like 100 miles an hour and just pulled the e-brake.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, woo! And I realized I hadn't asked myself for years what I wanted. For who knows the last time, like, it was actually doing anything that I wanted to do in life. And I said, the first thing I said was, I don't want this. I don't want this relationship. Mm. It wasn't even what I want.
It's right. Like, I knew, like, why am I working? Yeah. Why am I working for something that I don't even want to be in?
Yeah. And I don't want this. So it was profound. Mm-hmm. Simple, yet as most profound things are, they're quite simple.
Right.
And so, you know, then we went back to group therapy, and I was just moving toward it. Like I said early on, even if we were to work things out, I need to have a divorce. Mm. Because I realize, and I found in therapy, like, yeah, that marriage is super important to me, and that commitment is super important. Yes, probably born out of a negative and trauma. That being said, I still wanted to keep the sanctuary of it, mm-hmm. not sanctity, whatever the word is. Forgive my Boston grammar here. So even if we were going to stay together, which mm-hmm. was still a possibility in my mind, mm-hmm. I wanted a divorce. Mm. I needed a divorce. And, you know, that's when definitely the first affair that I had before we were married definitely started coming up a lot. Mm. Oh, well, it's different for you. You know, like it was all this, you know, it became very me versus you.
Right. My affair versus yours.
Yeah, and everything.
Which both were wrong. So, it's like to pit one against the other, it's like clear that she had not forgiven the first one. Not to say that she should mm-hmm. have, but she shouldn't have gone into a marriage mm-hmm. without having those feelings sorted out.
Yeah, I guess, but I shouldn't have gone into a marriage not being accountable to myself and being
to
myself. And if I had knowing that I had a tendency to be verbally abusive, then I should not actually take really good action to work for, you know, that, then I, that's on me.
Yeah. So did you guys end up getting divorced?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. We got separated first. She got an apartment.
Did she stop seeing the other guy during this whole time?
I don't know. I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, I was pretty clear, and I got to a point where I was like pretty much knowing that I would want it to be over, as fucking painful as it was. It was one of the most excruciating times of my life. I was, you know, borderline suicidal, like really contemplating taking my own life, and just the pain was huge. And it wasn't just the affair, it was the cognitive dissonance of the idea of what marriage was to me. And I was with her for 10 years, almost right. 9 to 10 years of my life. At that point, that's a quarter of my life.
Yeah. And the pain that you failed in something that you held so sacred.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah.
And so I want to kind of talk about toxic masculinity, because everything you've been saying, I feel like kind of can stem back to that.
Sure.
Not at a fault of yours, at a fault of our world and our society, that, you know, you grew up from a place where therapy is kind of looked down on, and it's not really, you know, what men do. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's such a big thing in our world today when people are like, oh, well, you know, men don't cry, and, you know, be a man and toughen up and be strong. And I feel like there's so many things in your timeline and in your story that if you would have had a different perspective, or a different, if someone would have turned you down a different road at one mm-hmm. of those, it would have saved you from so many of the things that you dealt with, and would have later on in life probably allowed you to make different decisions to save you from a lot of the chaos that ensued from those decisions.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I agree that it's that, you know, I shy away from clicky words like that, but it's a very true thing. And I really do talk, I actually openly talk about masculinity in a good positive sense with my students and kids that I teach and the young men I work with, and how vulnerability is actually the most brave you can be.
Yeah.
And because it is. And I'm a big fan of Glennon Doyle. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've read Untamed, and she talks about that, this specific thing in her book, because she's talking about how she raised her daughters to be these radical feminists. And then she's like, wait a second. When was the last time I took my son out? Because she used to say, take your daughters out and be like,
right.
look at her. I wonder how strong and what type of business leader she is. And then it's like, well, what about the boys? Mm-hmm. Because then she heard on the news, you know, male rapes this person, male mass shooting, male right. this, male this. Yeah. And this anger comes from, it's not a male thing, yet the reason it's male is because of undealt with emotions.
Yeah.
Undealt with not knowing how to healthily process what you're actually experiencing.
Totally.
Because you're labeled a, you know, you're labeled a derogatory term, or you're labeled less than a man. You're, you know, in where I came from, they're like, you know, definitely homophobic terms. Mm-hmm. And it's toxic. It is toxic masculinity. And, you know, I'm so grateful that, I'm so grateful, like, there's a song called God Bless, like, The Broken Road. It's like that kind of corny, cheesy country song, but it's fucking beautiful because it's like, yeah, God bless the broken road, because here I am now, I'll be 44 this week, and I'm a man who's, like, I'm honest, and I'm a man of integrity, and I can, like, I can look people in the eye and I can just be myself, mm-hmm. and I can process what I'm feeling. And I'm crying because I'm so proud of myself because of how far I've come.
Yeah.
You know, and it ails me so much to know that I've hurt people along the way. And, you know, it hurts me because we've never had closure, me and my ex, and I really wish we could. I've reached out before, but maybe sometime she'll be ready. And maybe if ever she watches this and she sees it and she wants to have closure, because I really, like, you know, I want to, you know, I just want to take accountability for the pain that I've caused. And just let it be known, like, the pain wasn't your fault. It wasn't, like, anybody else's fault, but it wasn't, like, it was just something I never dealt with. And, like,
yeah.
And I didn't know how to. So if there could be any type of compassion in that, you know, if we're dealing with people who are, especially young men who are, like, exhibiting the behaviors that are angry and lashing out, just know that they're fucking hurting so bad.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to be like, lock that fucker up and get away from me, you know, and, you know, and, but I mean, there's a reason why mass shootings are white males. Like, it's like, you know, this, and it's so easy to be like, oh, it's, and just make it this targeted thing to be angry at. Mm-hmm. But it's, we're not helping. We're not fucking helping.
Right.
And it's really, like, to embrace somebody. And because toxic masculinity shows up in many ways. It shows up in the negative side of stoicism. Like, I believe in the stoic philosophies, meaning, like, the stoic, like, oh, yeah.
Right. Like, I'm a wall. I'm fine.
I'm totally fine. Yeah. Exactly. It shows up there. It shows up in super aggressive behavior. It shows up in very demeaning ways. Like, mm-hmm. You know, thinking better than another side of the species, you know, thinking you're better than women or whatever it is. It's shows up in many ways, and it stems from somewhere. It comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think in today's society, we're so quick to attack the individual. And we're so quick to hold somebody accountable and not give space to growth and learning. And if I can be anything, and I almost didn't come today because I was like freaking the fuck out. But I'm like, if I can be anything, I can be an example of a human being can grow. And
yeah.
A human being can learn. And I'm 44. I'm about to be a father. And I know in my core now who I am, and I'm not that guy I was running away from. I'm like embracing him.
Yeah.
And embracing how sensitive I was. I was a super sensitive kid.
Like, yeah.
Cry at the drop of a hat sensitive.
That's my favorite thing about Tay, mm-hmm. is that he's sensitive and in touch with his emotions. Like, I think it's so interesting that so many kids and men get raised with this, don't be emotional, don't cry, don't, like, talk about your feelings. But all women are like, fuck, I wish my guy would be emotional, talk about his feelings, like, yeah. Cry, like, when he needs to. So I think it's a matter of redefining, you know, those really, really old beliefs. Mm-hmm. And the more people can do, you know, what you're doing now and come on and get emotional and get vulnerable and say, yeah, I used to be this way and I used to believe in all these things. And now I'm breaking open so that I can, like, bloom in a different way, mm-hmm. and look how much better I am for it. Mm. If, you know, one guy can hear that and be like, oh fuck, like I identify with that and I should do that too. That's huge.
Yeah. And reach out to me. If you're that guy and you're afraid and you don't have that group, I'll tell you right now, I have amazing guy friends. Like, I have guys that I cry with. I have guys that we tell each other every single day we love each other.
Oh, I love that.
And we embrace, and we really, the goal is like, how, if, and I tell this to my students now, I'm like, I teach a lot of martial arts, and a lot of what I try and teach is not martial arts. It's like, if I can every single day ask myself, how can I be a better man? How can I be a better friend? How can I be a better husband? How can I be a better dad? How can I be a better friend, partner, or whatever it is, a better coworker? And if my focus is on that, then it's not, you're not going, you know, pointing the finger around.
Yeah.
It's like, and that doesn't mean that we're not, things haven't happened to us in our life, or things will not happen. You know, we're going to be hurt.
Yeah.
You're going to get hurt. But if we're hurt and then we shove that deep down inside, and then that hurt comes out later on somebody I love, they don't deserve that.
Yeah.
You know, they don't deserve that. So I talk about vulnerability being the actually most courageous thing you can be. Because if you look in the dictionary, one of the definitions of vulnerability is being susceptible to attack.
Mm-hmm.
So you're literally opening yourself to being
attacked. Yep. Yep.
Think about the amount of courage and bravery that takes.
Yeah.
To walk in. And be like, bare my chest.
Fucking A.
Bare my chest and be like, here it is.
Yeah. And it's, on a more superficial level, it's so much more attractive for me as a woman to see a man in that light, mm-hmm. as opposed to being, quote, whatever the fuck this even means, manly. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's so much more attractive to be like, oh my God, that person knows who they are and is confident in themselves and is vulnerable enough to like show people. Yeah. And be their true authentic self. It's the most attractive thing in any person, even like in like a female friend that like I'm mm-hmm. wanting to be friends with. When I can see their true authentic self and they're willing to show that to me, I'm like, oh, this is someone I want to connect with deeper.
Yeah. Yeah. And I 100%. And I have few friends, but man, they're plenty. And it's those types of folks. And
so you're getting ready to have a baby girl.
Yes.
Yay.
Yes.
With your amazing wife, fiance, wife?
We call each other.
Okay.
But 2020 happened, so
right.
Plans go.
Okay, we're going to say wife. And I just freaking adore her. I think she is one of the most mm-hmm. beautiful, incredible humans I've ever met.
Well, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be speaking openly had it not been for her influence in my life.
Yeah.
I mean, and not because she's some magic worker, which I think she is, but... because she gave me space.
Yeah.
So if I can, that's another message I would love to say, is that people who may be behaving poorly, if we can give them space to actually go through and share what they're actually feeling, give them the space to heal and express. Because it might be the first fucking time.
Yeah.
That somebody says, I'm scared.
Right.
I don't know who I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been amazing, and what she's gone through, like she's seen me be suicidal. She's seen like how she stuck around. I don't know.
I feel that way too with Tay. I write about it a lot in the second book, how he gave me the space and the okay to like go and heal and do what I needed to do and exist in a place that wasn't confined in like the traditional relationship box. Mm-hmm. And he will never truly know like what that did for me. Like we probably wouldn't be together. I wouldn't be the person that I am now if he wouldn't have given me that space. So mm-hmm. I think that's huge. And that doesn't mean to let someone walk all over you or to completely ignore red flags that are fucking flying in your face and like enter into a shitty relationship because of it. But give the person space to be able to heal and process and work through some of those things.
Yeah.
So I think that's great. Mm-hmm. So you guys are getting ready to have a baby girl. I'm so excited for you both. What are some things that you're hoping because it's been really beautiful, even just in this episode, mm-hmm. to see where you started from and mm-hmm. how you've grown and shifted and really put in the work to mm-hmm. transform into the man that you are now. So what do you think as that new man you want to pass on to this like little being that you're bringing into the world?
Well, I already said I love Glennon Doyle, so I do not want to tame her, you know, and I don't want her to fit into some idea or mold that even I may have, you know. So like, I think I will be successful if I don't get in the way. And that doesn't mean be an absentee. That means like be very much involved, but just hopefully can just be like, oh, you want to go this way? Okay, let's go and see what happens this way.
Yeah.
You know, and and still a safe place for her to be uncomfortable, to express who she is. And I mean, I think she's going to probably teach me more than anything.
Oh, I can guarantee you.
I think that I am not the teacher in the relationship, that she will be.
Yeah.
And I just want to create a family dynamic, at least that, and also give an example of what I believe a good man is. So if and when she grows up, and if she wants to be with a man, that she can have an example of like how to she deserves to be treated. And
yeah,
and hopefully I will do that by treating her mother the way, and you know, and what I don't want to hide anything. So I don't want to, you know, I feel like the biggest one of huge things we do to hurt and create a lot of these toxic problems is we pretend to kids that something's not happening.
Yeah.
They know what the fuck is going on.
Yes.
I knew there was something wrong when I was a kid. But no one came and said, hey,
yeah,
come here.
You're not crazy. This is what's going on.
This is what's going on.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if you've seen Pink's recent documentary.
No, I haven't yet. I can't wait, though.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah. She's just phenomenal in herself.
Just to show how she shows how flawed she is. She shows how she's torn between her career and her kids, but she knows by doing her career she's teaching her kids more than she could if she just was like gave up on herself and what she truly desired.
Right.
And so I think we have to circle back around when I do have my baby girl and be like, so what you're learning,
right?
And how's that idea of not getting in the way work?
Yeah.
I'm
yeah,
like, you know, it's great. Or it's like, fuck, I'm struggling. But yep. I hope that I can be flawed with her.
But how beautiful that you were able to have all of those experiences with your ex-wife and, mm-hmm. you know, what the cheating taught you and how it pushed you into therapy to really start to do some of the work. How beautiful that you had all of those experiences before you brought this new being into the world so that she can now have a dad who is in touch with all of those emotions and mm-hmm. is not afraid to be vulnerable and wants to teach all those things that you should have been taught when you were little.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. And then, yeah. And I don't know, you know, but I do know, yes to all that, but we have no idea what's coming.
Yeah, it'll be a wild ride, dude. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. Can you tell people where to stalk you and find you on social media?
Yes. I think I'm at Josh Wingate. You can see the spelling on the screen. At Josh Wingate on I'm mostly on Instagram.
Yeah.
I am an actor, and I have another Instagram account, Josh Wingate Official, which is
that's the official one.
That's more acting.
Right, right.
But if you want to, I'm more on just Josh Wingate. And then if you want to say hi, say hi. And
yeah.
And there's a link to my band on there too, if you like music. I've got some crazy. I still want to be a rock star at 44. So
I mean, why not, dude?
Why not?
Teach the kid that you can do it all.
Hell yeah.
Exactly. Thank you for being here. I know this was not like the most comfortable topic to discuss, but I think you did a really beautiful job at showing your the journey of how far you've come. And I hope I know it will inspire some people out there.
I hope that's what I hope too. And I hope that people can find that inspiration. They can find just a little bit more in touch with who they are on the beyond all the stuff we put on top of ourselves, and forgiveness. I hope we can learn to forgive one another, because I think by forgiving, we're actually giving ourselves like a huge gift.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Amen to that. Cheers, dude.
Thank you for having me.
I want to thank Josh for really pushing through the fear and showing up to do this interview, because I think so many people are going to get not only a good look at, you know, his personal journey and story and how he healed, but also really get some insight as to what could be going on with some of the male figures that they've dealt with or that are in their life, and how to better help them get more in touch with breaking down some of those toxic masculinity traits. Okay, we are going to switch gears and hop into some of your FML stories. Here we go.
Hey, Gabrielle. My name is Marcy Darling, and I'm the author of Divorce Diva. I have been divorced for 1 year after a three-year-long brutal battle with a scallywag ex who could not tell the truth to save his life. After he left, he had given me a lot of jewelry over our 20 years together. I decided that the jewelry carried bad juju, so I sold it all, and I decided I wanted to take my children on my bucket list trip to do some of the things that I'd always dreamed about, which were sleeping in castles, riding on the Orient Express, visiting Josephine Baker's castle in France, and taking my children to see some amazing art in Paris. So that is what I did. And we had the most incredible experience. And taking my children and my niece on the Orient Express through the Alps was a life-changing, transformative experience. And was so decadent, so ravishing. It gave me the only jewels that truly matter, memories with my beloveds that we will all treasure forever. So I thought I would want to share that with you.
Oh my God, girl, I fucking love this so much. If there is ever a time to sell the jewelry, it's to do it to travel. We all know that I sold my engagement ring to take my FML trip. And kudos to you, girl. What better way than to say thank you next than to sell the jewelry and take your beautiful kids on such a life-changing adventure. It's just fucking awesome. Yay for you.
Hi, Gabrielle. My name is Shiva. I'm 29 years old, and my FML story is about a mother who was about to become my mother-in-law, but I came to my senses and didn't let it happen. I met my ex about 2 years ago. Let's call him Vlad. He brought his mom to the U.S. to take care of her, because she did not have anyone back home and she had some health issues. When we met, they used to live together in a house he bought. After a couple months, he asked me to move in with him to the house. That was a hard no for me, even though I didn't know her that much at the time. He used to tell me how negative and unappreciated she is all the time, and I was worried that as soon as she gets comfortable with me, the respect that was between us disappears. Me saying no resulted in him selling the house, us renting our own place and a separate place for her. I'm not even going to tell you how much she complained through the whole process, rolled her eyes at me whenever she had a chance, and asking Vlad why I didn't want to move in with them. She complained about every single apartment she looked at. Nothing was good enough for her, and she basically ruined the experience of moving in together as a couple for us. I started seeing her true self the more I spent time with her through our interactions and family gatherings. At every gathering, she used to talk about herself the whole time, her unhealthy relationships with her ex-husbands, who, by the way, divorced her 29 years ago, her toxic dad who used to beat her mom while she was pregnant with her, and so much more. These stories, were on repeat at every gathering. I was lucky that he was so honest that he told me everything she said behind my back. Like her calling me a bitch for suggesting him to do therapy to heal from the toxic, unhealthy relationship he had with his parents. A couple times, she downplayed my career, asking me how much I get paid and how much I will get paid after I'm done with my PhD. By the way, this was when I was doing my PhD in chemistry. Another incident was the day after we got engaged. We had our moms over for lunch for Mother's Day. She came in all grumpy and upset. I went for a hug. She obviously didn't hug me, then asked to see the ring. She then said that the ring is too big, and in their country, when someone gets engaged, they usually get separated a month after. I never forget that day. She never showed any interest in wedding planning, never asked if we needed any help with anything, and whenever she talked about the wedding, it was only about her not knowing what to wear. Sounds like a narcissistic person, doesn't it? She took every opportunity to bring his son down and call him names and not appreciate anything he did for her. This is while he took complete care of her, taking her to groceries, doctors, walks, hikes, gym, Well, he was also paying for everything. On top of all this, every Friday she felt entitled enough to text him asking where he's planning to take her for the weekend, as if he and I had no plans of our own as a couple. There was no sense of boundaries or privacy on her end whatsoever. Every time we wanted to take a vacation, she made sure Vlad feels bad for leaving her alone. A month before I ended things, we planned a hiking trip. She straight up said, "No, you can't go," as if he's a 5-year-old asking for her permission. She was so self-centered that she said we can't go because we will get COVID and transfer it to her. Pretty sure that was just a lame excuse, as we were planning to get tested before seeing her anyway. I reached the point that I realized I could, but no longer wanted to stay in a relationship my fiancé and I weren't the only people in charge of. I felt that she thought of herself as the wife and was thinking of me probably as a side chick, so I left. I've been so happy and in peace with my decision ever since. I really could not see myself marrying into that family. I'm raised in a healthy family where people respect and appreciate each other, show interest in each other's lives instead of only talking about themselves, and care deeply for each other. So their family dynamic was really off to me. Anyway, thank you for your amazing podcast. I really love it, and I love your book even more.
Oh, girl. Okay, I have so many things to say about this, because I know some people listening will be like, well, you know, you're marrying him, you're not marrying his family. But let me tell you, I highly disagree. I also had a very different but toxic mother-in-law, and it was a fucking struggle. It was a struggle to watch her and my ex-husband try and work their shit out in a very toxic way. It was, people always say, you know, you're not marrying the family, you're marrying them. That's true in some cases. And I do know that some people have in-laws that they hate and they deal and work it out because the relationship is good enough and strong enough to withhold that. For me personally, I will never fucking be with and marry someone ever again whose family I don't like and get along with, because you do. You do marry the family in a lot of ways. There are, especially when there's kids that become involved and you're forced to, you know, be dropping them off to spend time with them. I would never want my children to grow up in a toxic space made toxic by the in-laws. So I'm here for it. More power to you, girl, for making that decision and really choosing you. I'm sure there were, things in the relationship also that prompted that decision, but I am with you 100% on that. I never thought I would be so diligent in caring about someone's family. But then I look at it and I'm like, dude, if you marry into my family, you get my mom as a bonus mom. Like, you gotta at least come with some goods to the table. Next week, everybody, I am bringing on a guest named Ryan Haddon, who is a life and spiritual coach. We dive deep into all the blocks that are keeping us from finding the relationships that we really are hoping for and desire and wanting to attract, from how our type is keeping us from finding those soulmates, and really how your subconscious mind is sabotaging your love life, and more importantly, how to manifest the relationships that we truly desire. She is incredible. Her story is incredible. And we really get into some of the things I know people are wanting to learn how to do in their own lives as far as attracting those relationships that we want to be manifesting. So I'm really excited that Ryan agreed to come on, and I can't wait for you guys to hear next week's episode. As always, make sure you are subscribed so you never miss an episode. Make sure you're keeping up with us on Instagram at FML Talk Podcast. And if you are not hanging out on the subscription site, I highly recommend you come party with us on there. Some of the testimonials I have gotten from the women in this Facebook group and how everyone is supporting each other and really creating this beautiful community has been really fucking awesome. You can do that on patreon.com/FMLtalk. You also get an entire season of uncut bonus episodes that are so much fun. And we're about to start diving into some book two stuff on that subscription site. So that is the place I promise you want to be. I will see you next week. Until then, have a self-love cocktail on me, guys. Cheers.